What is up, Vermont Edition podcast listener? This is Elodie Reed, digital producer for VPR. Just to let you know, this podcast has been edited for brevity and clarity. Enjoy.
This is Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Childhood obesity is a national problem. Members of the American Academy of Pediatrics call it an unrelenting epidemic. Relying on data from 1999 to 2016, a 2018 AAP study shows that rates of overweight and obesity have increased in all age groups among children ages 2 to 19. One out of every five children in the United States have obesity. In Vermont, the statewide picture is a little better. About 13% of children ages 10 to 17 fall into the category of obesity, according to 2017 data. But that number jumps precipitously depending on what county is being tracked. Poverty and obesity also appear to be closely tied. So in many Vermont communities, the obesity rate for children is significantly higher. But what's the right solution or the right way to drive that number down? Recently, Weight Watchers, which has rebranded itself as WW, came out with a food tracking app aimed at kids. It's called Curbo, and rather than tracking calories, it classifies foods into green, yellow, or red categories, like a stoplight. If you look at reviews of the app, there are very strong opinions. Some people say it's helpful, maybe even necessary, given the continuing problem with obesity in this country. But others say this is exactly the wrong way to approach kids, food, and body image. They say it will lead to disordered eating, body shame, and an unhealthy idea of how to think about food. So who's right? And what's a balanced approach to helping kids have healthy lifestyles? We're going to spend the show talking about kids, food, dieting, and nutrition today. We're joined by Farrell Burtman. Farrell is a registered dietitian and nutritionist and a full-time faculty member teaching at UVM's Nutrition and Food Sciences Department. She's also the current president of the Vermont Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics. Farrell Burtman, welcome to Vermont Edition.
I am so thrilled to be here. Thank you.
So, you know, there's those statistics. 13% of children ages 10 to 17 in Vermont fall into the category of obesity. And you hear those numbers, and sometimes they're alarming, and you think that in some Vermont counties it may be upwards of 40% of kids are dealing with obesity. But what does that actually mean in a real sense? I mean, give us one picture of one person and why it's important that we're thinking about obesity as a problem.
So first of all, when we're defining obesity, we're looking at percentiles. So what you're telling me is that there's a certain percentage of kids that are falling above the 95th percentile. And when we consider BMI for kids, we look at that bell curve.
And so, BMI is body mass index, right?
Exactly. So what I would like to bring into this is this idea that we are diverse people. There are a diversity of body shapes. We want people to live healthy, thriving lives. We want to set them up to live their best life to their highest potential. So where I would want to go with this is that individual, we want to empower them to embrace who they are in the body that they have, in being inclusive and allowing for that body diversity. An example I could give you is I wear a 9.5 size shoe. Genetics has set me up to wear this size shoe. I would not compare myself to my friend who has an 8 size shoe and say that my shoe or my foot is superior or inferior to hers. Now, I recognize that there's also a diversity of thought around this topic. We are concerned about chronic disease, and in my work as a dietitian, I want to address chronic disease and making sure people can live the healthiest, most fulfilling life until the end of their time. But we're finding increasingly that if we're just focused on weight, that is not giving the full picture, and it might give the wrong picture. Weight is not necessarily a good indicator of eating habits and movement habits. And so that individual would benefit if we had a deeper conversation about what they're eating and how they're moving their body.
So do you think the statistics are something that's wrong to focus on? I mean, if we look at the statistics around obesity in this country or in Vermont, and certainly how states rank and how communities rank, and, you know, that, as I said, it gives us a little bit of a picture. But is that the wrong way to focus on it when you're looking at obesity as one data point and not a whole person.
So this good or bad, right or wrong, this is part of the problem. It is complex. I look to epidemiology and statistics to look at trends. Are there neighborhoods, are there zip codes that do not have appropriate food environments, that do not have access? And that is a public level opportunity for us to make sure there's a variety of foods that are accessible and attainable for that community. But sort of fear-mongering around weight only is not capturing the entire issue. And I recognize, again, that some of my colleagues might feel differently about that, and I want to create space for them to share their ideas. But if we're just looking at weight as its own predictor of health, that can lead to fat phobia. It can lead to somebody feeling like they are in the bad category or they are less of a person, when the messaging should be, we are a diverse population. And with diversity comes so many wonderful attributes. We spend a lot of time discussing diversity of race and ethnicity and ability, and creating space now to understand if there is that genetic propensity for a diverse body size. How can we be more kind and more inclusive to that individual?
And Farrell, you know, it is complicated because, as you said, there are health outcomes that are statistically tied often to body size, and not for an individual, you know, not on the individual level, but when we look at population and health, you know, obviously there are people who are concerned about higher BMIs and certain health outcomes. And so we're looking statistically, but then also looking at an individual, and you want people to feel good about who they are. And when you look at dieting and you look at body positivity, part of having a healthy body may actually be tied to feeling good about how you look and who you are. But then we also know that there are these, you know, that health outcomes are statistically less good for people the greater weight they are. And so, you know, how do we tease that apart to get to a place where we're giving kids the right information and the right tools?
And I love that you brought up tools. I'll share with you a tool that is really gaining momentum, and that is based on this idea of division of responsibility. I am a mama to an 11 and 13-year-old. Shout out. They're going to be mortified. So what my job is as a parent is to decide what to bring into the home and when to serve meals, when to serve snacks. I use words like, the kitchen is closed right now if there is excessive snacking before dinner. I would like to choose fruits and vegetables and whole grains and a variety of foods that I put on the table, family style eating. It is then the child's job to decide how much they want to eat and what they want to eat. We know that it takes 10, 15 exposures to a food to have a child want to eat it. We're now finding it might take more. It is okay if they choose not to eat that food that you put out. We don't want to reward them for eating it. We don't want to shame them for not eating it. We want to remain neutral around food. And this is different than the messaging that I grew up with, and different from the messaging that we see in this new app. There are some new recommendations, for example, and this might sound out of left field. Place the dessert on the table with the rest of the food. And the thought is that if the child knows that they're going to have dessert at the end of the meal, they might, quote, quote, save space and know they're getting full, so decide not to eat the rest of the plate in front of them to hold out for that dessert. If you make that dessert and you as a parent get to choose what you're going to present, part on a level playing field with the rest of the food, we find that kids will tend to eat a variety of foods on the table and not save space for that food. Where it's particularly important is we know that kids eat outside the home. So when they're eating on their own and the parent isn't telling them this is good for you, this is bad for you, if they are conscientious and self-aware and understand those cues for hunger, for feeling full, satiety, then they're less likely to act like there's a sale at Macy's when, you know, there may be chips and sweets at somebody else's house. They're already keyed in on their own level of satiety and if they're hungry. So we want to set them up so that as they get older, they can be empowered to listen to these hunger cues and listen to what they want to eat. Another way that we can look at this is intuitive eating. And increasingly, I am seeing that there are a lot of healthy outcomes that are attached to this mind-body connection around food.
When you say intuitive eating, what do you mean? Kids sort of figuring out, I'm hungry now, I'm going to eat until I'm not hungry. Mm-hmm. So the parents' role in that is then to put appropriate, healthy, nutritional choices in front of the kids?
So I want to key back with this word healthy. So who decides what is healthy? It is the parent's decision what they're going to bring to the table. I would recommend to parents, if they're unsure of a variety of foods that they can bring, there is help out there. But labeling, tonight we're going to have a healthy dinner, again, puts power around food. We don't
Let me push back on you for a second,
sure.
Because everybody judges food. And even when you're saying as an adult, part of our job as a parent is to choose the foods that are put in front of a child. You may try not to put a judgment on that food for the child, but you're doing the judging when you go to the grocery store, right? You're trying to figure out what's nutritional, what's going to give, you know, what's a balance of lean protein and carbs and, you know, something that tastes good and something that fits my budget. I mean, there's no way to take judgment completely out of food purchasing, even if you're trying to take it out of what you put on the table and what you tell your kids, right?
And my pushback to you in the friendliest way possible is, where is that coming from? Was it your own relationship with food? Is it perhaps not you, Jane, obviously,
sure.
But is it your own deeper sense of fat phobia or feeling like you've been ostracized or made fun of because of your own body diversity? And if we can turn to loving and enjoying food, bringing, if possible, and I understand that some folks are working the double shift, bringing people around the table to enjoy food together and to make the focus around that time together and not, do I have a nutritionally dense food? Do I have a high fiber food? If you have a variety of foods and you present them on different intervals, that child will receive the nourishment that they need.
Food companies have spent billions, trillions of dollars figuring out how to make people want food that tastes good, but it may have a lot of sugar, it may have a lot of salt, it may not have a lot of the things that your body needs to function well. So if you put a bunch of foods in front of anybody, adult or child, you know, is it our nature to gravitate toward the thing that tastes really good and maybe really saturated with fat and sugar? You know, that idea that we're going to choose the things that sort of balance out, does that actually play in the modern world and the modern food industry?
Absolutely. We have to be mindful of our food environment. That, however, is not on an app level. That's mm-hmm. not on an individual counseling level. That is on a larger public health level, a larger thinking about how we appropriate funds. I was fortunate to spend a lot of my childhood on an apple farm here in Vermont. And so my food culture was growing up with specialty crops. As I've grown older, I've realized that there is a different funding structure for the Vermont apple farm than for foods that would lead to sugar and saturated fat. And so, yes, as a society, we can ask and request higher access to a variety of foods that are at an appropriate cost so that there is a stronger incentive to have high fiber fruits and vegetables, those types of foods. But on an individual level, trying to be as neutral around food is really beneficial. And taking it back to the kid. You know, if you have too much of anything, they're going to not feel so great. And so again, you're connecting the mind and the body. Oh, you look like you're kind of feeling a little off. Why
too
do you think
spinach.
That is? Too much broccoli.
We got a note from House Crow who says, I remember always being hungry when I was young, not in the sense that I was going to die of starvation, but simply because there was not the culture of nonstop snacking that we have today. For the most part, if you were hungry, you'd have to wait until the next meal, which could be hours away. It seems that we hardly discussed food then. Now we educated progressive middle-class types have shelves filled with Michael Pollan books and seem to never stop thinking or talking about food, which probably means we eat more of it too. Farrell, you know, what do you think about this idea of what maybe we used to think and how we used to think about food and how we do today and an obsession with food and what that might lead to? I mean, what about House Crow's comment?
Yeah, it's stressful. Our focus on food, I think, is part of leading to this fear and this stress, wanting somebody else to come up with food rules for us because we're so confused. Coming back to our own bodies and seeing what works for us and modeling that for kids. We understand as our culture becomes faster and we're more scheduled, there might be a turning to convenience foods because you're not able to take that time. I would stress for families to prioritize that time together if you can. Now, I understand there are families that are working the double shift and really struggle to make this work. But if you have the privilege of being able to say at this half an hour in the evening, we're turning off our devices, we're coming together. Make it have that same energy as, say, playing Uno with your family. You know how that feels when you're playing that board game and everybody's relaxed and having a good time and giggling? Making that family meal feel the same way. Speaking about snacking, there are times, especially as kids move into puberty, they do need to eat more. And so making options available maybe 2 to 3 hours before dinner is appropriate. If they're hungry, create an opportunity for them to eat, maybe a lighter snack. But the key is if you can stave off, say, 2 to 3 hours between those meals, they will be more hungry when they come to the table and more ready to try the foods that are presented to them.
And let's bring Dr. Erica Gibson into the conversation. Dr. Gibson is a pediatric primary care physician and adolescent medicine specialist at UVM Children's Hospital. One of the things she deals with in her practice is helping kids who have disordered eating or healthy relationships with food and their bodies. Dr. Gibson, it's a pleasure to have you with us today, too.
Thank you so much.
So, you know, you've been hearing a little bit about what Farrell Burtman has been saying about maybe removing the stigma or the judgment from food, letting children have intuitive eating, thinking about ways to fuel their bodies rather than have a certain body type. And you deal with some of this in a medical setting. You know, where do you come in on this conversation about how to help young people, children and teenagers, have a healthy relationship to food and their bodies?
Well, I agree with everything that Farrell said. Unfortunately, we've had a really intense focus on obesity and high BMIs in the last decade of medical practice, and for good reason, for some of the reasons she spoke to, in terms of the fact that we know folks with higher BMIs, as they move into adulthood, can have a lot of medical complications. But the messaging has gotten so intense, the monitoring has gotten so intense that in some cases, it has worked against young people. And I'm in the position as an adolescent medicine specialist of caring for young people who come to me with disordered eating that on occasion has evolved out of initially beginning to try to quote-unquote eat healthy, whether it's to lose weight or to get fit or to make someone else happy in your life who feels like you are unhealthy or is worried about you.
Well, you know, parents always worry about their children. I mean, I think that's sort of the natural state of parenting is like a constant low-level worry, and you want to give your kids the best possible outcome. And so maybe it's a re-education of adults into thinking differently about the relationship between food and their children's bodies. But, you know, adults are always going to worry that, oh, maybe you're not healthy, or maybe I'm giving you the wrong foods, or maybe you're going to get made fun of, or maybe you're going to be bullied, or you're not going to make the sports team. And it seems difficult maybe to educate parents into not projecting that onto their children. So how should they think about that?
Right. So, and I think the point that adults and parents maybe have lived by specific food rules and have dieted quite a bit and then might then project that onto their kids is a big part of this. It's not always the case, but something that can definitely play into it. You know, the things that Farrell spoke to in terms of providing lots of healthy options and really modeling for young people healthy ways to eat and how to make healthy choices, including having family meals when you're able to, although that certainly is really challenging in this busy world, is important. But it's also important when you are talking to a young person about being healthy and, you know, on the other hand, we have a lot of parents that worry a lot about picky eaters and, you know, kids not eating enough and growing well enough. And one thing we always say to them is that if they're thriving and developing normally, then let's not pay so much attention to the food, whether they're on the thinner side or on the heavier side, because you can be healthy at every side, at every size. And when it comes to talking about being healthier, it really is important not to focus so much on weight and numbers in particular as on healthy living. And again, healthy nutrition, healthy activity. We do know that young people can be bullied in terms of having heavier weights and sizes, and that can be really challenging. So as pediatricians and as parents, we should actually check in with young people about that also. And that can happen on the other end of the spectrum too, in terms of being a bit smaller. And, you know, the other thing in terms of family behaviors is that there can be a lot of unhealthy sort of weight talk in families. And people might not even know that they're doing it, but it's amazing what children can absorb in terms of what they hear from people around them when they're discussing weight or healthy eating or healthy living. And sometimes negative messaging can come through and then be carried forward.
You know, we were talking a little bit about ways to try to help give young people information. And this new app, it's called Curbo. It came out from WW or Weight Watchers. It's designed to help kids think about what they eat. And, you know, proponents say, look, this isn't a judgment thing, but we're putting this sort of stoplight system on. So fruits and vegetables are all green. And that's supposed to signal to a child these are healthy choices that you could eat quite a few of. Then there are some proteins and other things that are in the yellow category, good for you, but, you know, keep an eye on it. And then there are things that are in the red category. Farrell, what's wrong with that approach if you are an adult trying to give a child a sense of what types of foods might be good to consume lots of and what might, you know, lead to things that are actually, whether it's your size or not, not going to give you any nutritional value?
So I think concept is good, but there are some better ways to deliver that information, right? And we're doing a little bit better job in schools and after-school setting and in terms of delivering information about healthy foods. Again, being able to model that and talk about foods in your home and in your family meal setting is helpful. But following these sort of external food rules via an app, and, you know, the other thing we're trying really hard to do is actually get young people off their electronics and exercising more, I think is really problematic, because once you start down that road, often people aren't able to let go of that. And it strays from this whole concept of really intuitive eating and being more in touch with what is happening in your body and your mind in terms of the food you're taking in and how that makes you feel and what that helps you to do or what it prevents you from doing versus, you know, just going on an electronic app and punching in information and then setting it down and going away. So, you know, it's related to the concept of mindfulness also, which is, you know, so popular these days in terms of taking things slower and paying more attention and not needing like an external device to help guide you.
So, Farrell, what do you think?
Thank you. I couldn't agree more. One piece that I recently saw is this idea of if we're praising healthy foods or if we decide to call them good foods, what we're starting to do is actually encourage our kids to be people pleasers. They're eating those foods because we're providing them praise. And what I find destructive is that they're going to override their own sense of satiety and continue eating those quote, quote, good foods because they want to receive more praise from their parents. And so now we're overriding that intuitive eating, that sense of fullness, because they're desiring that parent's approval. So that can be, That is not, I believe, the intention of the parent. I also wanted to touch on this idea of schools. And schools especially in Vermont. I am so grateful for the schools that we have here. I'm so grateful for the different programs that we have in terms of connecting our kids with food, where it's grown, how it's grown. All of those really increase our connectedness with our environment, with our farmers, with how these foods are produced and part of our lives. That said, we have to be careful with some of the messaging in school as well, especially in the youngest age. If we have educators, as well-intentioned as they are, and I'm so grateful for them, but if they're talking about food as good and bad food, our younger people tend to be dogmatic. They tend to be black and white. And studies have shown that if the messaging around food at school is this food is good for you, this food is bad for you, and that child is served that quote, quote, bad food at home, they're starting to think that their parent could be bad. Why would my parent feed me this if this is a bad food? And I know that's not the intention. I'm sure that's not the intention of the educator. But again, it just speaks to dividing foods into good, bad, or dividing foods into green, yellow, and red. It is helpful to think about the varied diet, thinking about foods that are minimally processed. We see that high fiber foods, all of these types of foods can benefit healthy outcomes. But as parents, we don't want to emphasize, you know, the good and the bad. We just want to have a healthy relationship with that mealtime.
We did reach out to WW about the new app, this Curbo app for kids, and they declined to comment on the app, but did supply us a statement. They said Curbo is a family-based program focused on behavior change for healthier eating and more activity, not dieting or calorie counting. Studies show that behavior-based weight management programs do not cause eating disorders. In fact, they provide kids with tools to make balanced food choices and manage their weight in a healthy way. So WW is still thinking this app is a good thing, but as I said, if you go into the comments section of the app, you'll see a lot of really vehement opinions on both sides. Let's get some thoughts in here from Vermonters and people who are listening and thinking about this in Vermont and on other sides of our state borders as well. Nora is calling in from Norwich. Hi, Nora. Why don't you share your perspective?
Hey, Jane. Thank you. I am actually an organic vegetable farmer in Norwich. I have a CSA farm. And I just wanted to say that it is such a joy for me to see my CSA members bring their kids to their pickup day and see how excited the kids are to choose the pepper from the bin of the CSA table or go out to our pick your own garden and grab a leaf of kale and just start munching on it. So I guess it seems to me like rather than another electronic app to get people thinking about how to decide what they should be eating, making kids see vegetable eating as fun and like as a participatory activity is maybe a better way to go about it.
Yeah, Nora, thanks for sharing your perspective and your image of seeing the kids pick through the pick your own part of the CSA. Let's get another thought in from Tim and then we can come back to our guests. Tim is calling in from Moon Lake, New York. Hi, Tim.
How you doing, Jane? And hello to all the guests. I'm very happy that you're talking about this because I was a very large young man when I was a boy. And I feel that some of the things are that some of the vegetables and some of the foods that kids are given, which are supposed to be healthy, don't always agree with the children. And we don't even know that at the time. And maybe, like, for me, it was broccoli. I eat everything now. I feel a lot better. I'm a lot better. I lost a lot of weight as I've gotten older, but I've learned how to manage everything. And I think that regulating food times also is sometimes weird because my body likes to eat all the time. I lost more weight by eating smaller portions more times during the day and kept my energy levels up that way. Also, I was finding that I was lacking in energy by eating just 3 times a day. And I guess I could keep going, but I don't want to hold anybody else up. Keep this program alive. I love it.
Oh, Tim, thank you very much and appreciate hearing your perspective and your thinking on, you know, ways to think about this with kids and your own experience growing up and this idea that, you know, kids may not have food that really agrees with them. And so it doesn't make them feel good when they eat. And they may know that about their bodies in a different way than the adults who are feeding them do. Farrell, I know you wanted to respond to what Nora was saying about kids and a connection to where their food comes from.
Thank you. And I really appreciate both callers. Bringing kids to the farm, if you have the means, having a CSA, these are all wonderful, fun, exciting ways to interact with food, positive ways to interact with food. So now you're involving the child with the parent's end of that responsibility, bringing the food into the home, getting excited about maybe meeting that farmer, bringing that food in, helping prepare the foods. These are all really healthy, wonderful activities that will allow your child to become an autonomous person who is ready to prepare their own foods later on. Great activity. Be careful with saying, okay, now we only have good foods in the home. We don't want to label them. They're foods. They're exciting. They're grown in Vermont. There's a connection to the land. There's a connection to our culture. Wonderful ways to encourage kids to be involved. Another way is bringing in including them in your food prep, say on the weekend, if you want to do some prepping for the week. So it's easier. Maybe you have a very busy schedule to get that taken care of. Involve kids, help them learn those skills so that they are more ready later on to practice these same behaviors.
We got a note from Mary who says, I'm a retired registered dietitian, and I'm concerned about the trend toward defending mild obesity by registered dietitians today. The health effects of obesity are a national crisis. It does not make sense to normalize it. There are numerous reasons why the average person has difficulty feeding themselves a healthy diet. Dietitians are poorly serving the community by not speaking out about the heavy marketing of junk foods, oversized portions, and the promotion of, quote, fat acceptance, all of which amount to force feeding the public. Dr. Gibson, I'd love to get you in here on thoughts on that first, and then we'll try to see if we can squeeze Farrell in before the end of the show, too.
Well, I think as we discussed earlier, there are some real consequences in young people who become obese at a young age and then remain obese for the rest of their lives. But a lot of people are able to be healthy and well and participate in the activities that can support their size and support their body in all other ways. I don't think this is something we want to sweep under the rug and not address at all, but we need to address it in a smarter way, a way that can be more helpful to families and young people, a way that is not shaming. And also, if there's a little too much emphasis on the bad foods or the negative effects of obesity, there is a risk of someone being driven in the opposite direction and getting into trouble with not having enough nourishment, you know, which is a lot of what I will tend to see. So I don't think we're disregarding this topic and saying it doesn't matter. I just think we've gone too much in the other direction, and we need to bring things back to center at this point.
We also got a note from Javi who said, in place of healthy, perhaps nutritious would be less judgmental when teaching children habits. I grew up on a small farm focusing on sustainability, and our mother made a point to educate us on the importance of understanding nutrition instead of just telling us what was or was not healthy. As an adult, I see the word healthy as more of a personally defined word for making food choice. Nutritious is maybe more scientifically based. Farrell, you got about 20 seconds for final thoughts here.
We should be concerned about chronic disease that is associated with morbid obesity. So, Mary, I appreciate your call. We also have to ask ourselves, how is this coming about? Is it because of weight cycling? Is it because of depression? Did that person not participate in sports because of fat phobia? So that is part of this messaging, that all bodies are good bodies. You are perfect as you are, and we want you to live a healthy, fulfilling life where you thrive and you bring in joyful movement and you live your best life.
So then, you know, in conclusion, adults should think about ways to promote what for their kids? I mean, what do you give them and what do you say to them?
Yeah, I love the division of responsibility tool. I would say put down the devices, get around the table, perhaps buy some Vermont organic veggies, prepare them together, and bring back the love and enjoyment of food. And that is something I believe all of us as people in the healthcare system can come around and helping people be empowered to role model the enjoyment of life and the enjoyment of food and the enjoyment of movement.
Farrell Burtman is a registered dietitian and nutritionist. She's also a full-time faculty member teaching in UVM's Nutrition and Food Sciences Department, and she's current president of the American Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics.
Vermont Academy of Nutrition and Dietetics.
I promoted you. Dr. Erica Gibson is a pediatric primary care physician and adolescent medicine specialist at UVM's Children's Hospital. Thanks very much to both of you today for sharing your thoughts. Appreciate it.
It was a pleasure.
Thank you so much.